was part of a letter found in April 1977 at Camp Scott in Oklahoma. There was an on-site training session. One of the counselors had discovered her belongings had been gone through and donuts were stolen. The note was found inside an empty donut box, and it was taken as a prank. They were known for pulling pranks on the girls. This would be basically, I guess, from the Boy Scouts that was on down the road. But the note would be tossed away, and what was thought as a prank would turn into a tragic story. Camp Scott was in its 49th year of operation. It would be the 49th year for girls having the usual fun, laughter, and learning new things and make some wonderful memories.
Here's Pop. Here's the boy to go. I had a jay turn. Pass it this. I had a pencil that fart. About. It's a rhyme. You don't use it. All I have to do. Ask for a turn to this and it will be true.
On the morning of June 13th, 1977, the memory left behind at Camp Scott would be a living hell once three bodies would be found around 6 a.m. The day before, on the 12th, the girls would arrive at the camp to stay there for 2 weeks. The day went well, nobody was expecting the worst. But that evening, a thunderstorm had moved into the area around dinner time. The girls all had to go to their tents. Lori Farmer, Denise Milner, Michelle Gassay were all housed together in tent number 7. It's also been called tent number 8 if you count the counselor's tent, but I'm going to call it tent 7. Well, we're going to call it tent 7. But from what I've read, the rain seemed to have stopped at around 11 p.m. that night. And the girls were pretty much getting ready for bed around 8 that night. But before they did, they had written letters to home. The first letter we will talk about is by Lori. She was an 8-year-old intelligent little girl. And before she had come to Camp Scott, she didn't know if she wanted to go to the Girl Scout camp or a camp sponsored by Tulsa area YMCA. Her mother would decide for her, though, and Lori was just like any small child and was excited to meet new friends. Her last letter read as followed.
Dear Mom and Dad, Misty and Joe and Chad and Kathy, we're just getting ready to go to bed at 7:45. We're at the beginning of a storm and having a lot of fun. I've met two new friends, Michelle Gousset and Denise Milner. I'm sharing a tent with them. It started raining on the way back from dinner. We're sleeping on cots. I couldn't wait to write. We're all writing letters now because there's hardly anything else to do. With love, Lori.
Denise Milner was 10 years old. She was excited about camp too, but didn't want to leave her mom. Her five-year-old little sister. The closer it got to the day to leave, her mother said she didn't want to go and felt she wouldn't like it. And her mother convinced her to try it anyways, and she told her if it didn't work out, then she'd come and get her. Denise's last letter read as followed.
Dear Mom, I don't like camp. It's awful. The first day it rained. I have three new friends named Glenda, Lori, and Michelle. Michelle and Lori are my roommates. Mom, I don't want to stay at camp for 2 weeks. I want to come home and see Cassie and everybody. Your loving child, Denise Milner.
Michelle Gousset was 9 years old, and she was active and very athletic young girl, and she had attended camp the year before, and she was excited for the second time, just like she was the first time she went. But her parents talked about how she loved her African violet plants and hassled her mother to make sure she'd take care of them while she was gone. Michelle's last letter read as followed.
Dear Aunt Karen, how are you? I'm fine. I am writing from camp. We can't go outside because it is storming. Me and my tent mates are in the last tent in our unit. My tent mates are Denise Milner and Lori Farmer. My room is in shades of purple. Loved, Michelle. It was these three little girls that would be found by a camp counselor by the name of Carla at 6 a.m. the next morning. The bodies had been carried about 150 yards away from their tent. They were on the side of the trail that led to the showers. Carla had been heading to the showers when she spotted a sleeping bag at the base of a tree. She had thought it was some luggage, but further investigation, she would see Denise laying on top of her sleeping bag. She was half naked. She was dead. Carla would go get the camp director and her husband. They would find two more sleeping bags. The husband would go to pick them up, but felt the weight of them. They would find Lori and Michelle. The police would be notified.
They called me from headquarters early that morning and told me that the scouts up here had found a dead girl. And when I got here, to my surprise, there was still one. There was three, and it was a homicide.
At 7:30, several police officers were on site. At roughly 10 o'clock, the camp would be evacuated, and from my understanding, it was all kind of a hush-hush thing to the other girls, which is understandable for sure. This would be the last day Camp Scott was ever opened. It appeared that Lori and Michelle had died from blunt trauma to the head by a crowbar or pipe. The police felt their deaths would have probably been most likely instant. They also believed Lori might have been killed first. Both of them were gagged with duct tape. Denise had her arms tied behind her back. She had been gagged by duct tape. The police felt she might have been forced to walk or carried to the location she was found at due to her body being warmer than the other girls. She had been beaten, but cause of death was most likely strangulation. The cord was still around her neck when she was found. All three girls had been sexually assaulted, with two of them being raped.
In your mind, what kind of a person would do something like that?
We obviously know that it's a person who doesn't belong to what we accept as the normal human race.
The time of death ranged from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. because their bodies were dry and it had quit raining around 11. A large red flashlight would be found near the bodies. A cover had been placed over the light with a pin-sized hole in the cover. There were also some beer bottles and rumor mentioned a crowbar. Supposedly, this crowbar had a lot of good fingerprints on it, but from everything I have read, the crowbar didn't exist. Also, a cord was found and duct tape. Investigators informed they had found fingerprints on the body as well.
I found a hank of sash cord that out by in that general area that was dry, other than dew. So this would indicate that the crime was committed sometime after 11 o'clock, or that sash cord was put there after 11 o'clock, because it had not been rained on.
It was mentioned the night of the murders that there was a flashlight shining from the woods and noises that sounded like a moaning. The counselor would shine the flashlight in the direction and it would stop. The counselor would eventually give up after checking around the tents. The counselor's tent would have the flaps removed and stuff stolen from it, like purses and glasses. They'd leave sometime after 2 a.m. The glasses and glasses case would be found by the bodies. Around 2 a.m., the tent flap to tent 6 would open. An individual would look in with a flashlight. None of the girls could tell who the individual was, but assumed it was a counselor checking on them. The individual would be seen walking to tent 7. There were several reports of hearing a scream and hearing the word mommy or mama. Nobody would investigate, though. It was also reported a girl was seen walking around later that night in the camp crying. Did the screaming come from this girl? I guess it was common sense, most of the girls having been their first time without their parents. Who was this girl, though? I've not seen a name attached to this incident. There was a report of finding a girl sleepwalking. Could this be the same girl? Also, it was brought up that two counselors were scared by two unknown men at the camp. This happened the night before the murders. The floor to the tent was covered in blood. The individuals that done the crimes had seemed to try to clean it up with towels and mattresses. A shoe print was found outside of the tent, while there was a different print found inside the tent. A man would be arrested on June 15th, about 7 miles from the camp. The man was living in his vehicle. He would be questioned and later released. A local man who owned a ranch not far away would be questioned as well. It was assumed he was a suspect, but he had items stolen from him the week before. The items were an issue because they might have been connected to the murders. The ranch owner would pass a lie detector test. Some tracking dogs would be sent in on the 16th. It was confirmed whoever done this had passed by the counselor's tent before going to tent 6. The dogs would lead them to some ponds, but nothing was found once the ponds were searched. At some point during this, it was rumored a local Cherokee medicine man had cursed the dogs. Strangely enough, a dog would die on the 18th from heat. On the 20th, another dog would die because it had run out in traffic. Some caves could be found not too far from the camp. Some items were located in the cave that showed somebody had been using it.
We had gotten information from a very reliable source that they were living in a cave. There were two of them. They were living in a cave down in that area. And they say they stay at some friend's house until a police car comes by and they hit the brush and go up on this hill to a cave. We searched this at least 3 times, and we could not find a cave. One time we could smell smoke, but we couldn't locate where it was coming from. Well, what this informant didn't know was they were going across this hill and across a hollow to the next hill. That's where the cave was located. So we were looking in the general area, but we didn't have it. Couldn't find where the cave was at. And these is where the items are located from this camp.
Some of the items were linked to the murders.
We found what looked like where someone had been staying. It's what it was. It was a sack of flour. It's what really it was in a bread sack. Is what it was, and we picked it up, you know, and just curious. And we got to discussing, you know, if maybe it was something to do with this Girl Scout deal. And we decided, you know, we'd go up there and talk to him. And when we went back down there, when we found, well, there's panties and glasses, you know, a case for glasses, and some photos, and I see there was some newspaper there.
The cave was eventually linked to a man named Gene Leroy Hart. He had been spotted near the camp, and a big search would follow on the 23rd, 24th of June. Nothing would be found of him, but on July 5th, a man that looked like Hart was seen in the area, and the investigators would bring the dogs in quickly, but they would lose a scent once they found it. A weird thing would happen on July 29th with a private security team that was keeping watch over the camp, and they would end up seeing someone in the woods. They would investigate and find nobody. The weird part happens next. Upon returning from the search, they had found a pair of Denise Milner's shoes and socks. They were wet and left in a bag on the steps of the director's house. From what I gather, it seems they would see the individual a few times over the next few days, which in turn would cause them to start tying a piece of thread between the trees where they would see the individual. And the next day, the string would be broken and footprints would be found across the trails. Tracking dogs would also be brought in, and just like before, dogs would pick up scent, they would lose it, and the dog would start going around in circles, looking as if the individual had just vanished in thin air. Anyways, whoever left the shoes, were they really Denise's shoes? Was it just a prank? Was it Hart, or a person not even connected to the murders? It just makes this case more confusing. Finally, on April 6, 1978, Gene Leroy Hart would be arrested without incident about 45 miles from the camp at a house. The house was owned by someone else, and Gene would be taken to Oklahoma State Penitentiary. A little bit of Gene's history: he was in jail for kidnapping and raping two pregnant women, as well as four counts of burglary. He had escaped from jail in 1973, and he had been on the run the whole time. And the trial would begin on March 19, 1979. The state were produced witnesses who testified these topics. Hair recovered from one of the bodies were exactly the same as hair taken from Gene after he was captured. Samples of sperm from the bodies and underwear from Gene revealed very definite similarities, including the same percentage of malformed sperm, because he had a vasectomy years before. A masking tape on the flashlight found near the bodies. The tape was found at Gene's isolated childhood home. Some photos were found where he had then printed off 10 years earlier while in prison. And a small pipe and mirror at the shack were found as well. These items belonged to one of the counselors from the camp. The defense team would argue it was impossible to possibly identify an individual through hair and sperm. They also claimed all the items found were planted. They felt the man responsible for the murders was a man named William Stevens. The investigators, though, said they had eliminated him because hair samples did not match. And one witness claimed to have given William the flashlight found by the bodies a few months before the murders. And the witness also claimed William appeared at her house the morning of the murder with red stains on his boots and scratches on his arm. Well, both of his arms. A former Girl Scout claimed a week before the murder she was able to identify William through a photograph of the man who she claims to have seen outside her tent. The issue here is the state produced three other girls and two group leaders, and none of them could confirm this incident ever occurring. And a local waitress worked at a cafe about 12 miles from the camp, and she had said of seeing William there acting strange. And some other issues of the footprints found at the crime scene: Gene's shoe size was bigger than what was found. Also, his fingerprint didn't match the one found in the flashlight. With all the information gathered, the trial would end on the 30th of March, and the jury would have Gene Leroy Hart not guilty of the Girl Scout murders. He still had 305 years left of his 308-year sentence to serve from his past convictions. On June 4th, 1979, Gene would collapse and die about an hour later from exercising at the prison yard, leaving many questions surrounding the case. Did Gene do the crime? Did he have someone else with him? Or was it completely somebody else we do not know about? DNA tests have been done later on in the years and came back inconclusive due to the samples being too deteriorated. And sadly, the question arises, will this case ever be solved? Will justice ever be served to the girls after all this time? Before we end this episode, we're going to discuss some of our opinions and thoughts on this case. But I didn't go into much detail about the whole individual in the woods that the cop or the private security team kept going after, because they thought that he was basically like a shapeshifter, because he worked with like a medicine man. And they were saying that, like, because I guess they seen like dogs or something, if I remember correctly. but they kind of wondered if he was like really a shapeshifter, just kind of making them see him as a different thing or something. Like, it was a very weird case to read upon. But I also read, too, this actually inspired Friday the 13th movies. But I know the evidence kind of points toward Gene Leroy Hart. So most likely it could be him. But I've also read rumors about one of the female counselors possibly helped. And whether they did or not. But it's the two different size shoe prints is what kind of is interesting. What is your take on it?
I'm not trying to put the blame on anyone or make anyone feel bad about it, but I do think it could have been prevented. Like, if you're a camp counselor and you hear a kid crying, or a kid walking around, whether it's because they miss their mom or something going on, like, either way, you're going to have to get up and check on that kid. Like, you're out in the woods, like, you need to make sure that your kids are okay, regardless. Like, I don't care if she got a bug bite and started crying. Like, go check on her.
Even though it was a common thing, which I can understand kids being upset, being away from
the families. I know it was a different time, too, but they didn't coddle as much. Like, I understand that. I'm not...
Well, this place, too, has not been open since.
Well, yeah, I know. And I think that's a good thing because they definitely, like, they said someone shined a light on something and the noises stopped. Like, okay, obviously something's going on. You heard noises over there, shined a light, and it stopped. Go freaking look. Like, you could have saved their life.
Well, in the letter,
like, you could have died too, but also save their life.
Well, that note letter thing that they found too with about killing, because they usually house four girls in a tent, but mm-hmm. that one only had three.
So, and it sounds planned. Like, if that wasn't a counselor checking on those girls, remember when
they went to camps,
it said the somebody six. They couldn't see who it was.
Yeah, and they just thought it was a counselor checking.
Like,
on
that
them.
Sounds like definitely. Like, they were out to get those particular children.
Well, not only that, like, I don't know what the other, all the range of them.
But the Medicine Man stuff, the movie we watched on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I believe in, like, you know, Indian medicine. Like, I believe in a lot of stuff. Like, it worked at one point, and maybe a lot of it is just a whole lot of drugs in the medicine and making you hallucinate, whatever. I don't know. I believe in it. I think it's very spiritual. I don't know. So I think that could have very well been true, like with the shape-shifting and stuff. Or people could have thought, but those dogs dying, explain that right after all that.
Coincidence?
No.
As the skeptic part, that would be. Do you think Gene Leroy Hart done it? Remember, he was found not guilty, so did he?
I really don't know.
A lot of signs do point to him, and then a lot like, you know, the shoe print thing, yeah, but I don't know. But he did like wearing women's glasses because I think he was
and
arrested.
Glasses were stolen.
Yeah. That's what they said was like one of the female counselors helped do it because I think her glasses was found near the body or a glass case.
But they were stolen.
Oh, so yeah.
If they were stolen, it would be found mm-hmm. by the body.
Yeah.
But if she did, well, that could have been. What if she did help and. Everybody, all the other counselors thought, oh, okay, because she could have been like, oh, I'll go check on him. But she was helping, and they're like, oh, okay, she's being really nice doing night checks. Like, no, she was actually helping murder childs.
Well, if you think about it, like, with two shoe prints found, it definitely seemed like two different sizes, it definitely seems like there was more than one person involved.
Yeah, I definitely think there was more than one person involved, like carrying three kids. Older children, like, in their age range?
Well, I think
range.
The one might have been forced to walk, or they could have carried. But you would think, though, too, even though it was late at night, you think the girls, like, if they all weren't dead, they made them, like, you
walk
still think...
somewhere, you think someone would hear or
yeah,
see
you,
them.
You still think something would be... Which I know with, like, them covering the light, like, you ain't going to get much of a light. It's going to be more like a laser beam of light. But, yeah, it definitely seems like whether it be a female or a smaller man, it definitely seems like two people at least was involved. At least, I would think. Whether it be Gene Leroy Hart or just people that's never been connected to the case. It definitely seems like that William Stevens guy, that was just them trying to pin it. Probably like the Ted Bundy connections and stuff like that, where it's like he was in that area then he most likely done it.
Which, when something like traumatic and tragic and everything like that happens, you're going to try to put it on somebody. You need somebody to blame for like the horrific stuff.
Which Gene did have the history, you know, the raping women and all that. Like, he did have a history.
I mean,
but would he go to killing three little girls though?
I don't know.
Well, he could be drunk.
Like, I would want them to find the real person. But since he already had a history of raping women anyway, like, honestly, I would not care if they threw him under the jail for this. Like,
well, he already died, so don't
like worry. I know, but I'm just saying, like, the justice system has never been that great. Like, yeah, some aspects are pretty good, but they don't do a whole lot of justice for many things. So I don't know. I'm gonna get too upset and go into a rant, so I'm just not gonna.
Well, if you think about it though too, just the whole aspect of it, like he had a, you know, not a, any burglary, like even though he might have stole stuff from, like say he didn't do the killing, but he might have still stole stuff from the camp. That's just survival, basically. He got supplies that he needed.
Yeah. And then Denise, like, already writing a letter to her mom, like, saying, I wanted to come home. That was so sad. Like, the whole thing is sad, but her being like, hey, I don't want to be here. And then that night, she's
yeah, and could killed. Was that the same one that had the letter? Like, the one that didn't want to go and, like, was wanting to go to the YMCA and her mom chose her to go to the camp?
Yeah.
Like, she probably lives with that daily on her mind.
I know, but I hope, like, she knows the, or she did know. I don't know if she's still alive or not, but I hope she.
I can't remember.
I hope she made peace with herself about it and knew that there was no way that she just wanted her child to have fun.
Well, different time. That was back in the 70s. Yeah. Which a lot of serial killers and killers were all big in the 70s, but people still didn't expect it. Like, you never expect it to hit home until it does.
Yeah, exactly. I hope all their families found, like, peace, though.
I don't know, it is rough losing, you know, losing a child like that. Especially knowing that they got brutally murdered and stuff.
And, like, molested and everything as well.
Could you think, like, a lot of them, too, from my understanding, when they got off the bus, like, some of the parents were, like, standing there waiting to see what, you know, kid. Yeah. Somebody, what was the one? Somebody said, like, they're... Like, they didn't get off the bus or something. Their mom thought, like, it was one of them, but it turned out it wasn't. Like,
he was just getting off the bus slower.
Yeah, something like that.
He had forgot something and had to turn around and get it and come back.
Like, I could imagine that tragedy, just standing there waiting for your kid to get off, and then your kid not getting off, and you're kind of like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Something's going on. But yeah. But you got anything else to add?
No. I think I'm good.
All right, but we thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
I would just hope we remember Lori Lee Farmer, Doris Denise Milner, and Michelle Heather Gusset. I hope we remember those names.